fire aimed at elementary school children. We're here in front of the Newtown United Methodist Church, where we've watched people gathering all evening long. As tonight, the details are still pouring in. There are 27 victims, 20 children, 7 adults. And we've heard all day about the incredible response by teachers inside the school, which is considered one of the leading schools in the nation. And also tonight, we have a new image of the suspected shooter as we tell you everything we know about who did it, what kind of weapons, and why.
There you go. That is the reporting on the day of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. It was a mass shooting that occurred on December 14, 2012 in Newtown, Connecticut in the United States when 20-year-old Adam Lanza shot and killed 26 people. 20 of the victims were children between 6 and 7 years of age. The other 6 were adult staff members. Earlier that day, before driving to the school, Lanza shot his mother and at their Newtown home. As first responders arrived at school, Lanza killed himself, shooting himself in the head. The incident is the deadliest mass shooting in Connecticut history and the deadliest at an American elementary school or an elementary school in U.S. history. And the shooting, of course, prompted renewed debate about gun control in the United States, including proposals to make background check systems universal across the country and for new federal and state gun legislation banning the sale and manufacture of certain types of semi-automatic firearms and magazines which can hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. One of those people who had his life changed forever on that day is Lee Keelock. He was a teacher at the high school in Newtown on the day the mass shooting unfolded. Now, he works to help people since then to develop understandings of one another through storytelling and through empathy. He's a keynote speaker at a conference in Limerick this morning, which is taking place. He's involved with the Narrative 4 organization, which is a non-profit based in Limerick, which looks at dealing with this type of storytelling and empathy development to prevent things like this happening and create understanding between different groups and different people and help those who may be feeling marginalized or isolated in our society. I spoke to him yesterday and I first of all asked him how he got to this place of effectively teaching empathy and to take me back to, I suppose, Sandy Hook and what started him on this journey.
Yeah, this is all in hindsight, of course. I came to America when I was sort of 19 and I was traveling around, and then I became a school teacher. After years of travel, I went to college, I became a school teacher, and my first teaching opportunity was in Newtown, in Sandy Hook. And about a decade into my teaching there, I was an English teacher at the high school. And we had one of the signature horrors of our time, which was the mass shooting where 26 people were killed in under 4 minutes by an act of gun violence. And in the wake of that, we had no blueprint for what to do as teachers. But one of the things that I wanted to do was change the sort of curriculum and the reading that my students were doing, because it didn't work anymore. Nothing was working anymore. We were a traumatized community. So I actually wrote to a publisher for a book written by the Irish writer Colin McCann, and lo and behold, we met a few months later, and he told me about this dream that he had, to use stories as currency on the planet, on the sort of greatest currency on the planet that we have are our stories. And it just appealed to me at the time, because my students, sadly, were, and our whole community was defined by a single narrative, the narrative of the murders. And I wanted to just give them an opportunity to realize they're made up of more stories than that. And that's really how Narrative 4 was sort of born, at least for me. So it was by, that was the sort of catalyst moment, me and Colm, and then we talked about it, how to use stories.
Yeah, and from that, like you were in the upper school, is that right? The high school of,
yes.
So you had siblings in the class. You had people in class, siblings of those who died.
Oh yeah, there was. I mean, we're a small community. We're a small town, and there's about 100 teachers, 112 teachers, I think, at the time. In the school, the elementary school, the primary school is just down the street, and the other part of the story is that the the shooter used to go to the high school, so I never met him. He was being homeschooled at the time, but I taught his brother, and I obviously knew his mother, who used to come in for parent-teacher conferences, things like that. So yeah, we're a small community. There were, you know, my colleagues were killed in that event, and then the students themselves lost their own siblings, brothers and sisters, you know.
So you were on a steep learning curve right from the off as to how to handle this, how to deal with it, what to do for yourselves as as your students.
Yeah. I mean, none of us, there's no blueprint for that, right? None of us had a blueprint for that, and which was probably in some ways our saving grace, because we got to try out new things and experiment outside of the norm of teaching. So not that I would wish that sort of learning curve on anyone, but we got to experiment and we got to find things that worked, and if it felt right, we sort of did it. And narrative four was the thing that I did, and now here we are sort of 12 years later, and we're in thousands of schools all over the world trying to connect kids and create empathy between folks.
So how does it work?
I mean, it's a simple premise. You're going to love it. It's like two people walk into a room, one person, obviously these are facilitated discussions, but you exchange a story from your life, any story, could be happy, could be sad, could be embarrassing, whatever, and you tell it to your partner, and then they tell you their story. But the trick is that you then go back into the classroom, and you have to retell your partner's story in the first person as if it was your own. So it really brings you to, it really collapses the distance between you and another person, because you get very close to somebody else's lived experience.
So is it a way of walking in their shoes for a little bit?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, it's the ultimate, it's the most radical version of that, because you're actually, you have to hold somebody else's story, and you have to care for their story. And they're sitting right next to you when you retell it. So there's a really intimate moment that happens in that class, in that space. You really do get to walk around in their world for a minute.
And what's the reaction been like to people who have done this, and people you've told a story to, or people who have been through these sort of exercises?
Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal. Like, you can feel it in the room. It's palpable. The emotions in the room are palpable. The energy is, I'm not going to say every single time it works to this degree, but, definitely 95-99% of the time, people walk out of there feeling very transformed. Occasionally it gets difficult, right, if you have to hold a really difficult story that comes up, but there's a reflection period afterwards that, which is actually the really cool part too, because you get to reflect on the experience together as a group and sort of talk about it. And that's really where a lot of the magic happens in that moment too.
And these are stories based on people's own personal lives, things that have happened to them, something that would tell you a bit about who they are. Is that how it works?
Everyday stories, absolutely, everyday stories. But, I mean, that's the only sort of rule that we give people, is that the story has to have happened to you, or you had to be involved somehow in that story. You can't tell somebody else's story.
So from that then, Lee, is it like, I don't want to draw a straight line from the traumatic events of Sandy Hook as to, is part of the reason why it's being done, did you have the idea, and others, and Colin McCann, the idea that there wasn't enough empathy in the world, or not enough empathy was being shown by people to other people, and that in some ways contributing to these outbursts of violence wherever they occur?
Nobody is sort of born, right, or wakes up in the morning and just says, I'm going to do this, right? It's sort of a process over time, but the... Sorry, there's a siren going
That's
by
okay.
right now.
That's okay, yeah.
One sec. No, I mean, this is, for me, it's all in hindsight. The day after, Sandy Hook happened, I didn't suddenly wake up and say, oh, I'm going to create more empathy in the world. But in hindsight, right, when you sort of act on instinct, I wanted my students... Sadly, we are defined by a single narrative. We don't have the luxury of escaping that. that sort of that history or that story that's attached to our community. But one thing we can do is sort of present, you know, for me, I was thinking, how can my students get to tell other stories, more fun, more stories that shape them? We're a mosaic of stories. I wanted them to not just be defined by a single story. And so this is, again, in hindsight, I didn't wake up and think that, but when I met Colm, it just felt right, so we did it. And then, of course, down the line, the more schools and communities I went into, the more I'm like, wow, these stories are the connecting force. If you can connect a student or a young adult to another adult, maybe there's a chance that a kid who's suffering from, you know, some sort of a disconnect or social isolation
or dysfunction something like that gets some sort of help.
And then they've got an adult they can go to. If you know something personal about somebody, you're far more likely to act compassionately towards them or kinder to them. So, you know, that's why we do it.
And can I ask you, Lee, obviously a lot happened out and it is a huge political issue, gun rights, the politics of it all in America. There was, of course, the terrible, terrible stuff that happened with the conspiracy theories afterwards. Was there a road that people were re-traumatized after all of that again? That's still going on today with every school shooting and with the way things are. So was this a road you went down in order to counter all that or to try and help in your way? There's others like from multiple school shootings who have gone down the political road to try and change things, try and change the laws, as difficult and as frustrating as all that is in America.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I got very involved in gun legislation after that. We go to D.C., we tell our stories. We became part of a huge coalition in the country to prevent more gun violence in communities. And so that's been, in that respect, it's been a positive thing. I can't speak for what other people do to sort of heal, to try and heal. I mean, I imagine if you lost a child, it's impossible, right? You're never going to fully, the scar tissue will always be there, like it is for us. But one thing we are doing is working with the government now, and the new administration has put a new gun violence prevention team together. So I feel like we've been moving the needle on some of those issues, but it is a politically divisive issue. But here's the thing, if you do sit with people who are pro-gun, for example, and you do tell them your story, and you do exchange stories with each other, you do get closer to each other, you find common ground so that perhaps some sort of positive change is possible, you know?
By telling stories, you can try and change minds or change viewpoints, and that's the whole idea behind it. As tightly as some are clinging to guns for their own reason, their heritage or whatever else it is, their political beliefs, there's a way of trying to find a way through it, because it's an intractable problem, like you're pushing a stone up a hill in the United States.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. I mean, it's not an either-or issue. It's not either pro-gun or anti-gun. What I've learned through stories is that most people, even the people that want guns in the U.S., they want them because they want to protect themselves or protect their families, right? And we want the same. We want to remove guns for the same reason. So there's some common ground there. That's what you learn through telling stories. You learn about the motives of others and you know, the human sort of condition, right, of why people want to hold guns. And then hopefully that's a starting place.
It certainly is. Yeah, it certainly is. The story's good. I was in Utah this time last year, actually, as it happened, and I saw a television ad, and it was an ad to try. It was a public awareness campaign, effectively a public health campaign like you'd have over here on behalf of the government, urging people to lock up their gun safes because so many tragedies have happened with children coming upon them, and either accidentally or sometimes purposely taking their own lives. Which, to me, that's just, I just couldn't believe that there was a need for an ad like that. So when you're outside of America, is there a disconnect in trying to for people to understand why things are the way they are?
I think so, because people are drawn to those single narratives. And sadly, for example, the NRA, the National Rifle Association, who promotes guns, they only use the mass shootings because mass shootings make up about 2% of all gun deaths in America. Yeah. So the other 98% they don't want to talk about, which are things like, you know, kids getting into guns with it because they're not locked up in a safe. They don't talk about that because it's easier to talk about mass shootings because they're anomalies.
Yeah.
So,
there's that side of it too. Well, Lee, listen, good luck with the conference. It's a brilliant idea, and thanks so much for taking time to talk to me and explain it this morning.
Brilliant. Thank you. And thanks for anyone wants to join us. We're in Limerick, in Castle Troy, tomorrow, Friday, from 9:30 to 5. And you can find out at transformativenarrativesconference.com.
Fantastic. Transformativenarrativesconference.com and narrative4.ie as well for more information on that. Lee, thanks for talking to me.
Brilliant. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Yeah, remarkable stuff. Lee Keelock there, he's talking at that conference in Limerick this morning, the Castroy Park Hotel, the Transformative Narratives Conference. You can check that out online. And it's an amazing idea, a simple but a brilliant idea at the same time, to try and get people to tell each other stories in the first person as a way of breaking down barriers, breaking down lack of understanding of other people's lived experience, and trying to develop that key thing of empathy, which would go a long way to help everybody in the world, and try and prevent these sort of terrible things from happening. As you said, nobody is born wanting to do this. And there are the political side of it he talked about in America with all the guns and what that is, but there is the other side of it as well, as to what is happening in the person's life that makes them want to walk into a school and gun down 20 children and 6 teachers.